Hi, I'm Malcolm Hawker, and this is the CDO Matters podcast, the show where I dig deep into the strategic insights, best practices, and practical recommendations that modern data leaders need to help their organizations become truly data-driven. Tune in for thought-provoking discussions with data, IT, and business leaders to learn about the CDO matters that are top of mind for today's chief data officers. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good whatever time it is, wherever you are in the world. I am Malcolm Hawker. I'm the host of the CDO Matters podcast. And I am thrilled to be joined today by Dr. Joe Perez. And we are going to talk about how to be a better public speaker. I first met Joe in person about a year ago, almost to the date, a year ago at a CDO IQ conference in Boston in 2023, and was lucky enough to attend one of his presentations and was just blown away. As you're going to see, God has given Joe an incredible voice. So that's and it's just this silky smooth. It's like if voices were chocolate cakes, Joe would cake. His voice is incredible. So that's a gift, but the way he delivers a message is very powerful. And I think is something that we can learn from. I know there's a lot of CDOs out there who are relatively new to their jobs. I know there's a lot of CDOs who come from a technology background who may not necessarily be that comfortable talking. I'm here to tell you, and Joe is here to tell you today, that this is a learned skill. You can learn to do this better. And that's what we're going to talk about today on CDO Matters. Joe, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Malcolm. As he said about my voice, it is very silky smooth.
No, I'm so sorry.
I could not resist. That's awesome.
One of the things we use is humor in
I love it.
In speaking, so I just couldn't resist. So no, people who have never heard me, no, that's not how I sound. I was just being silly. But thank you so much for your, oh man, such a kind and gracious introduction, sir. I'm just tickled to death to be able to be on your program, you know, be on the same stage as the Hawk. Maybe we can do that at a conference sometime, you know, but no, thank you. Seriously. Yeah, I would. But no, I do appreciate your kind words, and I'm honored and, you know, thrilled to death to be able to share whatever knowledge, whatever things that I've gleaned over the years to be of help to your audience.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, so let's dive into it. The first thing that I asserted is that you can learn this. I think that there are some innate qualities that some of us have. Some of us has very commanding voices. Some of us do not. But I asserted that this is something that you can learn. Do you agree?
Yes, I do. It is a thing that you can learn. You know, I believe it's a combination of things. Okay. Personally, don't consider myself to have arrived by any means. You know, there's so many people out there who are so much better at this than I am, but I've been doing this for quite some time. And I don't know, maybe somehow by the grace of God, I must be doing something right because, well, I keep getting invited to speak. And I don't think it's because these people are gluttons for punishment either. Yeah. But, you know, I'm absolutely happy to share what I've learned over the years. You know, some people are great speakers because they have great natural skills. Others are great because they've learned it. They've been trained. Still others are great because they've determined to do the best with what they have. Well, maybe what some might sometimes lack in skill, they make up for with passion and determination. So, yeah, I believe it is a combination of things. You know, I think it comes down to having the right mindset, Malcolm, the right philosophy. It's also about remembering how important your audience is and how you want to make an impact on them, the ways in which you're going to make that impact, some concrete plan to do so. And yeah, I'll say that there are mechanical elements like choosing your topic, crafting the presentation itself, for each of those topics. And so I guess marketing comes into play as well. So happy to share my knowledge today. And yeah, most definitely, it is a thing that can be learned. It is both skill and talent. But either way, it needs to be honed. It needs to be developed. It needs to be informed. It needs to be channeled. And I do believe that it can be made into something successful and impactful for audiences, perhaps all over the world, depending on the sphere of influence that you might have.
Love it. Let's start simple and let's take a kind of a use case, because we're data nerds and we like our use cases. Let's take the use case of me being a CDO and I need to come up with a meaningful presentation to try to convince, let's say, a board of directors or a C-suite or somebody with bags of money to invest in something that I want to do. So I need to come up with a story, and it's basically a pitch. Right. So I think that would be a kind of a useful wrapper to kind of put around this, because I think all of us have to do that. Right. We all have to put together a pitch to convince somebody to do something. So let's use that as an anchor if we can. And let's go from there. All right. I got my big pitch in a few weeks. What's a good starting point for me? Do I need to write things down? Do I need to start, actually write down a storyline, or do I start with visuals? What do you think is a good way to start?
Sure. Well, again, a good way to start is to have, again, the right philosophy. How do you pick your topic? How do you pick what exactly it is you're going to talk about in that pitch that you're going to give? Well, I'd like to think of it as figuring out the sweet spot in your Venn diagram, as it were. The intersection of things. You know, if nothing comes to you right off the bat, start asking yourself some questions. Okay. Like, what is it that you are undeniably good at? You know, what is it that, that makes you lose track of time? Why? Because you love it so much that you want to keep going. You know, what is it that you're knowledgeable about? What do you have in your toolkit, as it were, to connect with that audience, to make that impact? Now, Malcolm, you know how I am about acronyms. So
you love acronyms.
I've got one. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm going to call this the Spark Zone. Okay, to help me remember these four questions that I like to ask myself and need to ask myself, think about a key word that goes with each of those four questions. Spark, S-P-A-R-K, strength, passion, authority, and resonance. Yeah, I know that only spells spar. All right, there's no K. But you know, spark sounds, I don't know, it sounds better than saying spar, unless you want to say you're going to spar with the other people in on your team, you know, whatever. So I'll elaborate on it. All right, the S, strength. What is it that you're good at? Okay, can you break down a complex idea, concept, topic, idea, you know, whatever? Can you do this? Which ones can you do with these? Do you have a captivating storytelling ability innately? If not, develop it. Identifying your strengths, well, that's like wielding a powerful spotlight, right? It's going to illuminate the area where you're going to shine, your strength. What are you good at? All right. P, passion. What is it that makes you lose track of time? You know, what is it that you know about that ignites your soul, as it were? Okay, specific field. Does it pique your curiosity? Are you passionate about helping others overcome some sort of challenge? All right, follow that. Okay, keep up with that, right? Following your passions is going to inject your presentation, your pitch, with a continuous energy that's going to leave them spellbound. Well, maybe not spellbound, but, you know, leave them engaged and excited about it. All right. The A's authority. What areas are you particularly knowledge about, right? Have you dedicated years to mastering some skill, some topic, some concept? You know, are you recognized as a leader in that field, whatever it might be? Okay. Leveraging your authority in these areas is going to build trust, and it's going to create a sense of credibility. You know, that's what you got to have with your audience, credibility. Have you earned the right to talk to them about that particular topic, that pitch? All right. When your audience is going to feel confidence leaning in on what you're saying and learning from it, well, then you're golden. Okay. S-T-A-R, resonance. Okay. The R. What is it that you have that strikes a chord with your audience? The resonance here, right? How can you connect with them? How does your message connect with them? You know, with their lives, their hopes, their dreams. Can you address those things? Can you address their challenges, their goals, their issues, their concerns, the things that they bring up? Does your presentation, your pitch, offer some fresh perspective on it or some practical solution? See, finding resonance, okay, that's the secret sauce, Malcolm. You know, that's the thing that's going to transform your presentation from being informative to being transformative. That's what you want to achieve. And if any of these areas light your fire, S-P-A-R, you know, sparks you, well, then you are well on your way. You know, if you hit two or three of them, even better. But if you can somehow unlock the magic and get all four of these concentric circles working together harmoniously, holy cow, you're going to graduate from being speaker to being, I don't know, something a little closer to a guru, you know, presentation guru. Yeah, I don't know, maybe guru's a little too strong a word. So let's just call it a effective and captivating communicator. You know, think of all these things. I said Venn diagram earlier, right? Only instead of three intersecting circles, there's four of them, lobes, circles, whatever. To the extent that you can blend these things and maximize these and hit the mark, you know, be firing on all thrusters, as they say, whatever metaphor you want. The more that you can answer these spark questions or spar without the K, whatever, then the more successful I believe that you can be in making that pitch, in giving that presentation. And if you can possibly register and leverage all four of these, well, then the greater your potential to become maybe even a presentation superstar.
So let's peel the onion on a couple of these. Let's talk about passion.
Oh yeah.
Honestly, data is just not that exciting. Sorry, folks, cover your ears. Or I find it exciting, and anybody that listens to me or watches me knows that I find it exciting. But let's assume that our audience does not find it exciting. Is there an opportunity to use, and I've seen you do this in your presentation, you actually did it recently when you had a kind of a through line of going to the moon, right? Where you kind of created this through line of the presentation of going to the moon. Is it possible in my presentation, when it comes to passion, is there a way to create these underlying themes that would align to something that I'm passionate about? Like, and to use an analog and to say, let's maybe I'm passionate about woodworking. I don't know, right? But maybe I really am passionate about woodworking. Is there an opportunity for me? And maybe doesn't resonate as much because not everybody's passionate about woodworking, but we all, many of us, we're showing our age. Well, I can't even. but there are many of us who are enthralled by rocketry and going to space, and that idea is kind of transcends. Yeah. I think that kind of transcends a lot of people. It's like, well, there's something out there, and this is a huge task. Is there a way to weave in passions in a way through analogs in a presentation to kind of create the passion on an otherwise boring subject?
Absolutely, and you know, I agree with you, Malcolm. To the naked eye, data in and of itself, intrinsically, just data for the sake of data, is indeed boring. Okay, I will admit that. It isn't to me because I see beyond the facts, the figures, the numbers, I see the stories behind the data. I see the things that it can do. I see the decisions that it can inspire somebody to make. You know, you see the story behind the data. You see some kind of connection to something that is happening underneath. You bring in the human element in the same way that I did. Thank you. You're kind to bring that up as an example. I use the moon launch as an example. Now, simply because, well, the 55th anniversary was coming up that Saturday, you know, was 55 years ago to the day that Neil Armstrong set foot on the moon. And a challenge that riveted a nation and brought disparate industries together to to achieve that goal and to work on something that perhaps the different pieces, parts in and of themselves were not so meaningful, were not so exciting. But putting it together and making it into a goal, making it into a collective effort, making it into something that people could buy into and take ownership from, well, that's going to ignite them. That's going to pique their interest, because if a person sees that they are an integral part of the solution, if they see that their contributions, their words, their actions, their efforts are going to be taken into account, and they mean something, and they contribute to that impact, well, you better believe they're going to take ownership in it. And as a data storyteller, as a CDO, as someone who is going to pitch that message, if you will, find that hook, find that story, find that piece of information that makes that connection with the audience, be it the moon launch, woodworking. Okay, you may not be interested in woodworking, but you see the grain. You see the way that something that is a shapeless mass can be fashioned into something that is useful. The pieces are sawed to different lengths, to different dimensions. They are glued together. They are nailed together. They are screwed together, whatever, by whatever means, you know, they get attached. These things that don't look like they amount to anything in and of itself, in and of themselves. But when you put them together, you create something that is not only functional, but aesthetically beautiful. Yeah, you can sit on that chair. Yeah, you can put something on that table. Yeah, you can stack your books on that shelf. And looking at it, doggone, that thing is pretty, you know, when you look at it. Why? Because it's something that you fashioned with your hands. It's a design that you had in your mind and that you brought it into being through effort, okay? Make that connection with your data. Even if somebody doesn't have the talent to shape the wood, to put it together, to measure and cut and nail and screw and, you know, whatever, even if they make it come out to look like something that bears no resemblance to what was on the blueprint or whatnot, still the point is everyone can relate to creating something useful. We as humans are endowed by our creator, yeah, with certain unalienable rights, as it says in the Constitution. But no, we are endowed by our creator with the capacity to create, with the capacity to imagine, with the capacity to want to build things, to want to see something come to be from some effort, some part that we had in creating such a thing. Okay. So when it comes to data, that's what happens. It comes to wood. That may, you know, so if you can somehow make that connection, bam, you're golden.
So do you see what he did there, folks? Are you paying attention at home? Right? Like, and this is your genius, Joe Perez. So what he did, and this is a really powerful message. I just threw out woodworking. Like, I don't know why that came to the top of my head. I don't know why.
Me neither.
But I just threw it out there, because I was trying to find a way to say, hey, I'm passionate about something, and how do I connect that into a fairly boring subject? And what he did, just because this is his genius, is that he made an analog to what we do as data and analytics professionals, right? We take this unprocessed thing. In this case, it's literally a tree in a forest. And we take that, and what we do is we make a beautiful, unbelievable chair or piece of furniture or something. So that's an example of, hey, maybe you're not passionate about data, but maybe you're passionate about woodworking or rocketry or something, where you could find a yes. through line, a story that you can anchor within your presentation to allow that passion to show through, as Joe just did. I don't know if you know anything about woodworking, but you just convinced me that you do.
My father was a master craftsman. Unfortunately, that talent didn't pass on to me, but I'm creative in the sense of writing things I write, and yeah. I'm a musician as well. So sometimes, you know, if you're not into woodworking, you're into music. Look at the connections between music and data. Look at the connections between poetry and data. Look at the connection in writing. You have a story, right? Well, you are telling a story with your data. I actually have a presentation and a workshop along those lines. Called The Rhyme, Rhythm, and Rhetoric of Data Storytelling. and how these things, you know, how these things relate. So, yeah, the point is, whatever your passion might be, as you so expertly pointed out, Malcolm, thank you. You're kind with your words as well. You know, find that connection, because it's all about making a connection with your audience, finding something, you know, connect the known with the unknown, the analog, as you so brilliantly put it, Malcolm, right? The analog is, this is what I know, the specific piece of data that I'm looking at or the insights that I'm trying to derive from it, that's the unknown. If I somehow create a connection between the known and the unknown, I will have built a bridge, I will have achieved getting their attention, and potentially I can also achieve retention as well, right? Because once I get their attention, then I can ensure, hopefully, later on, retention. Will they remember what I've said and hopefully be better because of it?
It's interesting that you mentioned music. One of the better presentations that I've ever seen from a senior executive is where he actually used a metaphor of, and I'm commingling metaphor and analog. Maybe I should be more precise with my words. But where he used a metaphor of a symphony. And he started the presentation by saying, imagine you were the conductor in a symphony and everybody was just doing their own thing. And what would that sound like? And it was actually, he was on stage and he made like the sound. And it was like the tuning, like an orchestra does at the beginning. And they're all kind of tuning their instruments. Uh-huh. It sounded horrible that you wanted to cover your ears. And then he said, imagine that if everybody was working together under a common cause, under a common playbook, under a common set of rules. And it was actually, it was about data and data governance, believe it or not. And he was making a pitch for data governance. And it was, this is what it would sound like. And then he played the beautiful symphony. So this is a long-winded way of saying you can find ways to inject passion. You can find ways to make something resonate. Now, let's just, I do want to tie off on resonate, because I think that one is of all of the four, you know, pillars of your philosophy. I think that's a really, really important one, because ultimately to me, that says, I know you and I know what you care about and I know your pains. Right. I know your struggles. I know your opportunities. Maybe this is the other side of the struggle. But the resonate one requires you as a speaker to have some knowledge of what your audience cares about. Do you agree with what I just said?
100,000%, Malcolm. Okay. You see, I think that putting these things together, both relevance and resonance, okay, it needs to be relevant in the sense that it connects with the nitty-gritty details, the facts, the figures, the what. Okay, resonant, that's relevance, facts, figures, concepts, the what. And it connects with the mind, that's relevance. However, resonance goes a step farther than the what and goes to the why. Where relevance speaks to the mind, resonance speaks to the heart. And it gets into more of the why. And you get to see what really does motivate the people to whom you're trying to reach, to whom you're trying to speak, you know, the connections that you're attempting to make. Because, you know, achieving both relevance and resonance, touching both the mind and the heart, the soul, if you will, then, you know, you can achieve success as a speaker. I am firmly convinced of that. You hit the nail on the head, Malcolm, as usual. That's why I call him the hawk, folks.
I don't know. One of the tools that I like to use, and I'm certain that I've used or seen you use this as well, is a term that I would usually call rhetoric. Meaning saying things like, what if you could you imagine a world where your problems are no longer there? Or could you imagine a world, or let's together imagine a world where your biggest challenges no longer exist? What could be possible? I really like starting presentations that way, in a way that kind of resonates with the problems or a challenge of the people that I'm speaking to.
Right.
Because often what I think is that it may open a door for everything else that you're about to say. It may open the door for that you know, that story that you're going to tell, and the maybe some of the metaphors you're going to use. What do you think about the kind of the use of tools like that to ask rhetorical questions to get audiences engaged?
Absolutely. You know, you want to ask something that brings up a challenge. Just like when I said in my presentation last week at the CDO symposium, CDO IQ, excuse me, got to get the IQ in there, right? Does is data actionable? It's actionable if it helps you to make a decision, answer a question, or solve a problem. And asking those questions that challenge, asking those questions that stimulate thought, asking those questions that get people to turn that diamond over, you know, and try to gain either, it's either going to be a new concept or a new aspect of an existing concept. That opens the door for you to be able to gain their trust, as it were, to gain that credibility that is so necessary. You know, it's all about not just the philosophy, but it's also about how you go about talking. Okay, no matter what great intentions you might have, all right, it's important to have the right approach. Okay, the right mindset when it comes to speaking, to grabbing their attention. What are you trying to accomplish? What drives everything you do? How do you grab their attention? You know, the way I try to grab somebody's attention with these rhetorical questions, I'm going to use another acronym, the CARE impact. Okay, CARE. All right, and I form that. I use it. I capture attention, arouse interest, reignite emotions, and engage senses. And think about, you know, the impact at the end. That doesn't spell care, care with an I, but whatever, just like I did with spark. It's spar with a K, whatever. Okay, so capture attention. How do you do that? The rhetorical question? Yes. Open up with a bang. Some kind of a powerful question, like you mentioned. The story, a surprising statistic, some thought, another of those thought-provoking questions. You know, if you grab them in the first 30 seconds, they're going to be yours for the whole ride. At least that's the way it should be. Okay. Project that energy that you have, you know, arouse interest. That's the A, you know, don't just tell, compel, right? Weave in the story, as I said, you know, the relevant anecdote that you were talking about, a real world example, a hypothetical example, a rhetorical example. Let them see the connection between your topic and their lives. That's that resonance you were talking about. You know, curiosity. Spark that curiosity. Encourage them to think critically and actively engage with your material. Be comfortable with yourself to do that. All right, with the R, reignite emotions. Facts are important. Feelings, that's what sticks. Right, you got to tap into that. Yeah, the hopes, fears, goals, aspirations. Okay, use things that evoke laughter, maybe even tears. I don't know, a sense of wonder. Okay, challenge their perspective. Don't just be a stuffed shirt. A little healthy debate can be a powerful tool. Let's see, the E, engage their senses. The more you can involve, the better. Go beyond the visual. Don't just talk at a screen. And by all means, everybody knows, do not read your slides. I think everybody should know that. You know, that's the way it should be. Integrate different types of media, images, video, even sound effects, you know, that bring your message to life. Think beyond sight and sound. Is it possible even to incorporate touch, right, in your interaction with the audience? Use some kind of object lesson. So that's CARE, care, right? Lastly, impact. Impact their day today, right? Do not leave them hanging. Offer some sort of actionable takeaway, some concrete step, resources, tools, you know, things that they can use immediately. And by all means, Malcolm, end with a call to action. You start with a question, well, then motivate them to take the next step, whether it's implementing new skills, sharing the message that you share, or hey, even connecting with you personally on LinkedIn or something, you know? That's the way I look at it, Malcolm. The care impact mindset.
I love it. The first one there, I can't stress enough. You used a phrase early in our conversation. You said the hook. And you called it Captivate as a part of your acronym. Love it, love mm-hmm. it, love it. What I strongly recommend and what I've seen you do over and over again is within the first few slides, you got to grab them. Right?
Yes.
You've got to grab them in the first few slides. Now, I just suggested maybe the use of rhetoric to do this, but some idea of What if we could change the world together? Right. What if I told you I could give you $10 million to your bottom line next year? Would that interest you? Right. It sounds a little salesy, but these things work, folks. Right. Like grab
yes,
them, have a hook. Right. What if I could make your problems go away? What if, based on the fact, based on the kind of the resonance factor from the previous step, you know what they care about, you know what is making their lives difficult, and say, what if I could make that better for you? That's right. Going to be the hook that is going to make somebody listen. If you don't have a hook in the first 2 to 3 slides of that deck that you're making to convince people to give you money, then go back. It's the most important thing I would argue about it.
Amen to that.
Love the last step as well, which is, here is what I need. If you like what you've heard, here is what I need from you. Boom, boom, boom.
Yes.
Right. If the call to action is to get money, here's what I need from you. I need for you to allocate your finance an hour of your finance person's time to talk more. I need you to do this, and I need you to do this, and be very, very, very specific about what those exactly. asks are as a part of the impact portion of what we just talked about. I love it. Let's talk brass tacks in our last few minutes here. Okay. I've kind of got a storyline. I've got some metaphors that I think I could use. I think I know what sort of kind of hook I could use and what sort of, you know, pow statement I could use. All right, I'm staring at a blank screen. I've opened PowerPoint and I've stared at a blank screen. Maybe I've scribbled a few notes and a few things, or I've got some things in my noggin. What do you do, Joe? Do you storyboard? Do you script? Do you start in PowerPoint with visuals? What do you do?
All of the above. Yeah. So I believe in general to specific.
Okay.
Right? I may not know what my specific, and I've got the hiccups. That's pretty specific. Sorry about that. Okay. I start with the general and progress toward the specific. It's like building a skeleton, right? You get the outline, you get the, well, okay. the first thing I do is think, what is that topic? After I've gone through the philosophy, after I've taken it through the spark, you know, the spark grid, okay, then I get to the nitty gritty, right? What is the concept? What is my position statement?
Yeah.
Okay, that rhetorical question, you know, what problem am I trying to solve? What question am I trying to answer? What need am I trying to met? I get that. Then I think, okay, what kind of a title would be a catchy way of expressing that? Okay, so the concept, the title, right? A compelling description. Think of a paragraph, maybe two paragraphs that describe that topic, that concept, that question, you know, how you propose to answer that question, meet that need, solve that problem, address that concern, mitigate that bias, you know, whatever the case might be. Couple of paragraphs starting it off. Then think of an outline, a way that, okay, so do I have some concrete steps that I might go through to achieve these goals, to expand upon these paragraphs that I've written? In my case, I use alliteration. I use rhyme. I use alliteration, rhyme, acronyms. I love doing that. You don't have to do that. You know, I love that. Why? Because it makes it easier for people to remember. I bet that there are some people that watched my presentation last week who still remember. Start the race. Make your case, motivate the base, give it some space before you put it into place. Okay, they still remember that because I drilled it into them. There are those who listened to my keynote 2 years ago in Nuremberg, Germany at Developer Week that still remember the 5 pillars of making decisions with your data, you know, data-driven decision-making. You have to look, link, listen, leverage, and learn. Okay, you don't necessarily have to do that. Go with your own style. But think of something that is uniquely yours, something that is your signature modus operandi, as it were. Somehow, some way, some kind of structure to go with those paragraphs that you've written. Now, once you've done that, you've given yourself some steps to follow. Think about learning objectives, okay? Once you've got that off to the side, well, what is it that I intend for my audience to learn? Again, this is the teacher in me. I was an educator for 10 years before I got into information technology. So, you know, this is the teacher in me coming out. Have those learning objectives. Learning objectives are stated in the form of, you know, when this presentation is over, my audience will ... and then complete that sentence with some skill you want them to have, some concept you want them to know, or some issue you want them to be able to resolve. Those are your learning objectives. Think of your target audience. Think of some key words that go with it. Okay. Then once you have that, then you can start fleshing out each of the parts. Why? Because you have an overall framework to go by. You have an overarching statement that you are expanding upon. You have your introductory paragraphs that explain your problem statement, your thesis, your provocative question, or whatever. You have an outline that dictates or that informs the steps that you're going to go through to meet those goals that you have, you know, that you have that you have set forth. Okay, then it's just a matter of finding the meat that goes onto the bones, whether it be illustrations, anecdotes, quotes. I like to use quotes. There's nothing wrong with that. Use cases, scenarios, you know, whatever the case, fill those gaps up. And by the time you're through, you've got something that is going to blow people away. But only if you keep that, you know, that spark grid, that care mentality, the thought that my audience is the most important thing on this planet. Yep. It is not about me. It's about what I can do for you as my audience, sticking to what I call the five essential E's of dynamic speaking. You do that, you're golden.
I love it. I think we'll leave the five E's as a teaser to check you out, to check you out on YouTube. You've got a lot of amazing content on YouTube. You post a lot of amazing content on LinkedIn and through other channels. One thing I would leave kind of people thinking about, tying back to, in addition to everything that Joe just said, by the way, tying back to this, okay, how do I convince somebody to give me money? I'll share some things that have worked for me. For senior executives, six slides. One could even be just a title screen, by the way. First slide, the problem, right? High level, what's the problem? Second slide is the hook. It's the capture. It's the opportunity. What if I could make you $10 million next year? What would that look like to you, right? That's slide number two. Slide number three are the high level barriers. Yes, this is exciting, but unfortunately, these are some of the things in our way, right? That's slide number three. Slide number four, here are the things that we need to do in order to remove those barriers and get over the hump, right? Slide number five is a specific ask. Here's what I need for you to do. You could maybe inject another one in there that is maybe a timeline associated to slide four. Like what do we need to overcome the problem? This is a classic consulting kind of presentation sandwich that follows a bit of a story arc. You get them all excited at the top with the hook, with the capture. What if I could do this for you? Then you bring them down. You say, okay, well, here are all the things in the way. And then you bring them back up and you take them by the hand and you bring them back up and say, but we can do this. And here's the plan. But to do this, here's what I'm going to need to ask for you. If you kind of follow that, I think it's a good recipe. Last question. Mm-hmm. Do you script? Do you write things out? You start with the outline. I get it, but are you a scripter?
I am, but then I'll deviate. You know, I go with the flow and see, you know, because if I like to have at least my major zingers, if it were, you know, a lot of times the zingers will come out naturally, but I at least want to ensure that I cover the things that I intend to cover, that I have hit the highlights. So to a certain extent, or if I include a story into it. I'll have to remember, you know, the details of the story. I talk about the obstacles that the people in the moon launch involved with the Apollo program, you know, had to put up with. Or if I'm talking about the speech that Abraham Lincoln made, the Gettysburg Address, he came right after this guy who spoke for 2 hours. I actually, in one of my presentations, I memorized a paragraph from the speech of the man that came right before Lincoln. And then a month later, he writes Lincoln a letter and says, you know, you accomplished in 2 minutes what I couldn't accomplish in 2 hours. Okay. And that's in my, you know, that's in my workshop about conquering death by PowerPoint, where I get into the five E's. And again, that's a teaser for later on. No shameless plug. But the point is, those types of things I like to script, because, you know, if it's a point that I'm trying to make, or a specific quote or a specific story or, you know, specific incident or whatever, those things I script. The actual examples that I give are going to vary according to the audience. Those will be different, you know, and the more comfortable that I am with what I'm talking about. I go off the cards. I mean, we know what happened to Iron Man when he didn't stick to the cards. You know, he ended up revealing he was Iron Man, and that gave a lot of, that opened up a lot of issues. So, but still, that's a crazy metaphor. But yeah, I don't know. I do not always stick to the cards, as it were. But I at least want to have some sort of structure to go by so that I know if I have been allocated 45 minutes. Say, for example, I've been allocated 45 minutes. It's a brand new topic. I don't want to ramble. Something like that, I would probably script more rigidly than I otherwise would. But with these other topics that I've used several times that I've changed up and switched around based on the audience, and, you know, I adopt like a modular approach. You know, I might use the story of Norman Schwarzkopf instead of the moon launch. I might use the story of the people that came up with the COVID vaccine rather than, you know, the thing about Schwarzkopf. I might, you know, I have different little stories that I glean, you know, pull them out and stick another one in based on the audience. So yes and no to answer your question, depending upon the situation.
I mean, a half hour presentation to an internal team is drastically different than a 45 minute presentation to hundreds of people.
Right.
And if it's the latter, I mean, I'm a scripter. I always go off script, but the most useful tool to me about scripting is just simply timing.
Like, how long it takes
exactly.
you. Yeah. Right. You've got 15 thoughts in your head.
Yeah.
And you've got 30 minutes. Do you know if you could get through those 15 thoughts within those 30, within the allocated time? And if you don't write it down and think it through and plan, then you're not going to go. And you say, oh, crud, I can only get through 10 of these points. Well, let me pick the ones that I feel are the most important, and maybe only 8 of those. Script that out and you say, okay, good. I can do this in 28 minutes or whatever, you know, however many minutes. That is the biggest benefit I see with scripting, is when you know you have a certain amount of time and you get some kind of an idea of what you can fit into the allotted time.
A couple other things, food for thought, I will leave the audience with. One is practice, practice, practice.
Yep.
Do it to your cat. Do it to your dog. Force your kids to listen to one of the presentations. You'll get some feedback that you could never anticipate. The last thing is visuals. Joe, you're really good at this. Your presentations are visually rich. I would invite our listeners, if you are working at a larger company, well, first of all, if you're anything like me, where the only artistic bone, you have no artistic bone in your body. I mean, it's all stick figures and it's with an excessive, probably unhealthy reliance on smart art in PowerPoint, which I have.
That's a good tool.
Visuals are really, really powerful. And there are many of us who are more visually inclined than textually inclined. They can be really powerful.
Precise.
I would invite you to reach out to folks in a marketing group, or maybe even just explore things like TaskRabbit or Fiverr. Or there are graphic artists out there that can be worked with at a very, very reasonable price. who have visually inclined brains, graphically inclined brains, who can help put some good visuals to your six slide presentation. You'd be amazed how impactful just a good visual can be. Joe, you do it incredibly well in all of your presentations. That's the last nugget of insight that I'll leave you with. We're out of time. Dr. Joe Perez, as always, thank you for sharing your knowledge. Thank you for sharing your passion. As I mentioned earlier, please check out Joe on YouTube. What's the best way? Is it if I search Joe YouTube, Perez,
yes, sir.
What's the best way to search to find you on YouTube?
That's the best way to search to find me. Okay. I also have one of those shortened URLs. It's youtube.com/C/DrDR. Dr. Joe Perez Data.
Aha.
That simple.
Dr. Easy Joe Perez Data. He gives a really good presentation on YouTube. It's how to avoid death by PowerPoint. Did I say it correct? Avoid
yes,
death
sir.
By PowerPoint?
Yeah. There's several top avoiding death by PowerPoint. I'm actually changing it to read conquering death by PowerPoint.
But I love it.
On
okay.
the YouTube promo, though, it says avoiding death by PowerPoint. But I'm rethinking that since I've been asked to write an article. It's coming out in September in Compliance Today, a two-part article on that topic, avoiding or conquering death by PowerPoint. I'm real excited about that.
Love it. Check out Joe's content on YouTube. It'll take everything that we were talking about here to kind of the next step and to the next level and help you put some shovels in the ground when it comes to building that presentation,
Amen.
When it comes to getting comfortable and speaking in front of groups. Because yes. as CDOs, as data leaders, and even data practitioners, everybody needs to do this well. We are all selling. Folks, Dr. Joe, thank you so much to our audience. Thank you for checking us out. Look for another episode of CDO Matters coming to you very soon at a channel near you very soon. Thanks again. If you haven't already, please subscribe to this podcast, whether that's through YouTube or any of the other providers. Thank you so much for checking us out, and we will see you on another episode of CDO Matters sometime very soon. Bye, all.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Joe.